Hello, welcome to Microbyte. My name's Gavin Clark, software editor for The Register.
And I'm Mary Jo Foley, the editor of the ZDNet All About Microsoft blog.
On this edition of Microbyte, we'll be looking at a minor fallout between Microsoft and number-crunching analyst IDC. IDC reckons Microsoft misrepresented some of the data it used on Windows Phone shipments, apparently to inflate Microsoft's chances against the iPhone. We're going to look at how realistic any of the projections are around Windows on mobile. Microsoft decapitated its entertainment devices division, the division that's home to Windows Phone and the Xbox, and it dumped Jay Allard, the company's answer to Steve Jobs meets Tony Hawk. Is the timing good? And who's Microsoft's new Steve Jobs? And it set the internet alight. Apple's market cap surpassed Microsoft. Bloggers went into meltdown. Apple is the company Microsoft rescued in 1997 with $150 million in cash, and it's half Microsoft's size. Is this the rapture? Or is this just a bubble? Turns out, market cap's not the best way to measure Microsoft, but Apple is kicking Microsoft pants in 2010. We're going to get into that as well. MJ, Windows Phone Mobile in IDC TIFF. What's going on there?
Yes. Well, first, Gavin, can I ask you a question that's a burning question I have?
You can, yes.
Who is Tony Hawk?
He's a skateboarder.
Ah,
he's a professional skater.
When you made the reference to Tony Hawk, I'm like, is this someone I should know?
You should bing him sometime.
I will bing him immediately. Okay, so let's talk about Windows Phone 7, our favorite. What should we say? Whipping boy? I don't know. Although sometimes they deserve to be whipping.
I believe it's a fascinating subject. We need to uncover more of. We don't whip anything on this show.
So here's the backstory on what happened around projections for Windows Phone 7.
Yeah.
Microsoft was at a conference recently, the Remix conference in Paris, and there they showed a slide that was captured by a blogger in attendance that had this kind of crazy projection on it. It said Microsoft was going to sell 30 million Windows Phone 7 devices, well, not Microsoft, but its partners, between when the device gets launched and the end of 2011. And this set off a furor across the blogosphere because people were like, wow, that's not enough. That's too many. Then IDC came back and said, well, Microsoft just completely misrepresented our numbers. We didn't say that at all. And so it turns out IDC actually said that Microsoft would sell 32 million Windows phones between when the Windows Phone 7 launches and the end of 2011. Okay, so that means IDC is saying 2 million non-Windows Phone 7 devices are going to be sold during that period. But they're still saying 30 million Windows Phone 7s are going to be sold.
Right.
That's a pretty darn big number, Gavin.
Yeah, that is a big number. And what period of time are we estimating here?
Well, so we don't know exactly when Windows Phone 7 is going to launch, but the rumor on the street is September or October of this year. Okay, so that means in about a 15-month period, Microsoft and its partners are going to sell 30 million Windows Phone 7 devices in 15 months.
In 15 months, that's a year and a half. Okay. Well, that's just crazy.
Even less than a year and a half.
Yes, that's a phenomenal amount of phones. I think we ran the numbers earlier on, and I think we found out that Apple, it's taken 2.5 years, isn't it? Almost 3 years, actually. And they've just shipped 50 million phones, which gives you an idea of just how incredible the IDC number is, really, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the other things that kind of made me go, wow, really, were think about Windows Phone 7. It's a platform with zero apps right now. I mean, there's like maybe 5 or 7 that they've shown so far. But, I mean, we're starting from zero in terms of number of apps developed for the platform. Mm. We also have a platform on our hands that it looks like Zune HD, and I happen to actually like that look and feel. But, man, it takes a while to get used to it. And I think when people first see that, they're going to go, huh?
Who would have thought you're the target customer, apparently, for the Zune? Finally, we've found one.
I know. Here I am. But, you know, I think, you know, there's going to be a brand new interface, a whole new development platform. The number of apps they're starting with is zero. They've got some developers excited, but how many apps can they realistically think they're going to have by the end of 2011 when they're starting with zero?
Here's the thing. The IDC numbers, I mean, these guys, they're in the business of making numbers and selling their consulting services. So, you know, they want to make themselves look smart, and they want people to come to them, you know, and find out the answers to the mysteries of the IT industry. So that's the first thing. I mean, where they get these numbers from, they speak to vendors from what I can see. And so they've probably added some of the data in from shipments of people like Motorola and Nokia and the iPhone stuff, and they come up with this magic statistic. But the thing I think is interesting here is that, you know, IDC and Microsoft go way back. They partner every time there's a launch of Windows. IDC comes out with a report with some sky-high figure on how the latest version of Windows is going to add to the GDP of some country or increase the number of jobs in that particular economy. Well, it's interesting, IDC has chosen to distance itself from this particular set of claims around shipments of Windows Phone, which is interesting because clearly IDC feels that it's kind of out on a limb here, or that it's going to look stupid if this kind of number is kind of like, if people feel that it has made this kind of projection. And it sounds like, you know, as you said, MJ, with the lack of applications, the new interface, the complete break with the past, you know, it's just incredible, you know, to even think that the Windows Phone is going to ship that many units.
Mm-hmm. You know, I had an interesting conversation with the guy who actually took the screen capture of the slide. He works as a blogger for a site called Mobile Tech World.
Yeah.
And I said to him, you know, did they give any context at all about where they think this demand is going to come from? Like, who's going to buy all these phones? And he told me something really interesting. His name is Makram Dao. I probably am mispronouncing that, but that's his name. He said Microsoft's counting almost entirely on the demand coming from people who currently don't have smartphones. So they're not thinking it's going to be Apple defectors, it's not going to be RIM defectors, it's not going to be Nokia defectors, it's going to be, or Android, it's going to be people who right now don't even have a smartphone. They're more like feature phone kind of users. Mm. And suddenly they are miraculously going to go to Windows Phone 7.
Well, that's just incredible because nobody in the handset market accepts that it's going to be a purely smartphone play. Look at Nokia. They see smartphones as still being a relatively small percentage of their business compared to the mass market of feature phones. You know, people who like the buttons, like the small screens, not everyone likes to Facebook. I mean, this is kind of evangelism gone wild over at Microsoft.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, I think there will be some customers who come through that route. Mm. I mean, especially, well, there'll be some, but the big question again is going to be, okay, if for that to happen, the contract pricing plans on these phones is going to have to be amazing, right? Yeah. It can't be like Kin, you know, the Kin phone where they've got, you know, $80 per month plans for people who are supposedly still living in their parents' basements, who are the main customer for Kin. It's going to have to be really cheap to attract people who are feature phone users. And I don't know that they're going to be able to do that, or especially if they end up kind of adding all these cloud services to the phone. Like if they have some kind of a, you know, wipe your phone service, if they have some kind of a photo storage service, if they have some kind of a Zune Music service,
yeah.
The bill for those phones is going to be huge, I would think.
Well, let's look at that. I mean, also, you mentioned the Kin there, but recently one of the Kin's US retail suppliers, Best Buy, actually cut the price for that, didn't they? Which is telling indication that the thing's not selling, or it's not going out as they'd hoped it would. And I think, judging by the reaction that the Kin got from the blogosphere, at least, which is kind of be a good barometer of where the zeitgeist is in some of these things, is that they've kind of misstepped.
Yeah, I mean, I asked my readers over at ZDNet, when they cut the price of the Kin phones, they cut it from 50 and 100 to 0 and 50. So the Kin 1 is now 0. And I said, okay, so is that what the doctor ordered? Are you going to buy a Kin now, or do you think that's going to kickstart the market? And without a fault, everybody who responded to me said no, because the data plan is still $80 a month. So what if the phone is 0?
Yeah, I mean, so go on.
No, so yeah, I mean, that's the problem. It always comes down to, you know, what are the add-on services? What's the data plan pricing? How many years are you locked into a contract? And unless Microsoft has some really big tricks up its sleeve, which maybe it does, and we don't know, but if it doesn't, I don't see how they can make this 30 million number a reality.
I don't see it. When it comes down to the kin, 80 bucks for a calling plan, that's kind of iPhone territory, and the phone is obviously nowhere near as good. It's not even in the same city, never mind the same ballpark, so nobody's gonna want that. But they seem to have, you know, Microsoft seems to be working at a higher level without having realized there's more of a nuance to this market than meets the eye, and that's certainly the kind of thing that, you know, the carriers are well aware of, you know, that there's more nuance in this. But, you know, we'll see. Microsoft still kind of slightly vexed and confused by what it takes to deliver a mobile OS and a mobile phone. I mean, the company has done well in the boring enterprise market, as, you know, Steve said when he laughed off the iPhone that time a few years back. It's done, you know, it's got a very respectable business in business phones, but it hasn't cracked how to appeal to the consumers, and it's clear it feels, you know, those consumers and business users are going to want to jump up from their boring old feature phones, which is just like you say, it's not an automatic transition. People, not everyone wants a smartphone.
Yeah, I mean, again, unless they've got some pretty amazing thing up their sleeve, which maybe they do, we don't know. I'll give them a small benefit of the doubt. I just don't see how they can do it.
Yeah. Well, I know that another connected subject was the massive reorganization or work in progress that's happening to the Entertainment Devices division, which is obviously home to Windows Phone and the Windows Phone efforts. There's many other projects and efforts going on inside Microsoft, including the Xbox and Natal. Recently, the president of Entertainment Devices, Robbie Back, said he was resigning from the company, which was an interesting move, because like you've seen Robbie speak on a number of occasions, and I don't know about you, but I've always got the impression that he's not been entirely engaged with what's been going on in the phone market. He's got more of kind of an obsession with games and the Xbox titles than phones. That was interesting. You know, it was kind of a banner departure. But one of the other departures that was interesting was Jay Allard, who made his name by managing the technical development of the Xbox. And most people laughed when Microsoft got into games consoles. They thought Xbox is a losing proposition. Maybe I can say that. What the fuck are they doing getting into an Xbox? Who knows? Into games market. You know, this, you know, whatever. So, but it's done very well. You know, still can't crack the Japanese market, can't become number one over there, but they've established a reasonable franchise. But it seems that ever since then, Allard's kind of struggled to come up with the next big idea. You know, there was the Zune, there was the Zune. That was my IM going off, by the way. Show it's all in real time here. There was the Zune, which was basically kicked around, repackaged, reprioritized, reimagined, call it what you want. It went from a device to a service. Then there was the Courier tablet, the supposedly dual screen tablet, which kind of fizzled, and as we best understand, got cancelled by Microsoft. They sat on that one for a little while. So Allard's kind of been sitting there. There's supposedly the go-to man for the next cool thing. I mean, like you said, he wore black. He had a completely bald head. You know, it was Call Me Jay. You know, not his first full name. You know, Microsoft liked to hype his kind of dangerous kind of ex-gaming credentials. You know, supposedly this was the new face of cool for Microsoft in a company that's decidedly and unapologetically stodgy when it comes to, you know, its dealings, because it likes to woo the business crowd. So Allard couldn't cut it. And when you look at the ideas that have been setting the market alight for the last few years, let's be brutal about it, they've come from Apple, they haven't come from Microsoft. So I think the question we're all looking at now is what happens to Entertainment Devices, first of all, and secondly, who's the next ideas man at Microsoft? MJ, what are your thoughts on what happens to E&D? You've been reading some of the macro developments over there, or is it micro developments that have been going on in E&D's fate? Tell me what you're seeing, what you're reading.
I like that, Macrosoft. Yes,
it's certainly going that way.
So, Gavin, you know, the first question, you're right, is what happens to E&D? Because right now, the way Microsoft's going to structure it as of July 1, which is the start of their new fiscal year, there's going to be no more person who is the equivalent of Robbie Buck. They've taken the guy who's the head gaming guy now, whose name is Don Matrick. They've taken the guy who's the head phone guy, Andy Lees, and they're having both of them report straight to Ballmer, but there's no head of E&D right now. So I've had people say, so does that mean E&D goes away as a division? Like, is there going to be, you know, Windows Office and then maybe a phone group and maybe a gaming group instead of one big E&D? And Microsoft really hasn't answered that so far. The one clue I have seen that makes me think E&D might go away is they just reassigned somebody whose name is Mindy Mount, who is the CFO for E&D, and she is now with Search and Advertising and no longer is the CFO of E&D. So there's no CFO of E&D right now either. Every group at Microsoft has its own CFO. So if there isn't one, it makes you kind of wonder, why isn't there one? And what's the intention there? Now, there's a ton of rumors flying around about what Microsoft might do organizationally. I've heard some really crazy ones, and I've heard some sane ones, mostly crazy ones.
Give us a crazy.
The crazy one, although some people think it is a sensible one, is the phone piece of E&D goes to Steven Sinofsky. So Steven Sinofsky right now runs Windows and Windows Live. And so in this theory, he would also get Windows Phone. Now, I think that's too big a charter for any one guy, even if he's the golden boy at Microsoft right now. But that's one theory, that they may give that division to him, and that would give them a more cohesive platform strategy and a better story to tell about how phones are just an extension of the PC, blah, blah, blah. Okay.
That might be a crazy rumor, but I mean, I remember that one circulating, was it earlier this year? And that's pretty, as crazy goes, I quite like that. It kind of makes sense at a higher level. And I think we read that Sinofsky apparently helpfully pointed out that Back had a quote-unquote continued failure in the mobile space during some December strategy review for Microsoft. So, you know, as we all know, Microsoft is an intensely political organization. Individuals and business units are always vying for dominance over each other over there.
Yep. So, it may be crazy. It may not. The part of it that I consider to be crazy is I think it's too much responsibility for any one person to be able to do a good job with, because they're working on Windows 8 right now. They're finishing up Windows Live Wave 4, going on to Wave 5. They get a lot of things in that space that are happening all at once, plus now launching Windows Phone 7 and working on Windows Phone 8. So it would be a lot for one person. Mm-hmm. But that's a theory. It's a rumor and a theory. Another one is that they have separate divisions. So there's an entertainment division that gets headed by Matrick, and there is a separate phone division that gets headed by Lees, and they become, you know, kind of co-equals, and that gives Microsoft even more presidents than they already have, because Robbie Buck was one of the four presidents. That would give them five if they do it that way. So that's another idea, possibility, option. But for right now, it's very clear that Ballmer is the one controlling E&D, and he is doing what he did with Windows right after Vista happened. He took back control of Windows, and he kind of ran it until they made Sinofsky the head of Windows. Yeah. He's doing this exact same thing now with E&D since Bach is going to be retiring.
It seems this is the way Microsoft operates. It'd be interesting to say, when it came to Windows 7, Ballmer's stewardship, it was very much a transitionary period, because you need somebody in charge, and you know, Ballmer's the man, he's the CEO. But when it came to Windows 7, Sinofsky essentially was one of the lesser VPs who was, at the end of the day, elevated to be put in charge of the group. I think that came after Windows 7 shipped, I forget now. But the hard work of Windows 7 was pretty much done and dusted by that point. Looking at what happened with that group, if you look at entertainment devices, that leaves potentially either Matrick or Lees, who could conceivably be the new president of entertainment devices. That is, if Ballmer decides to keep entertainment devices together as a whole. And, you know, it's a roll of the dice, which way you think, if he does go with either of those two guys, it says either, you know, gaming is more important, or Windows Mobile is more important, and if not, one of those guys has got to learn pretty quickly about the other's business.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be a big thing. If Andy Lee suddenly got put in charge of gaming and phones, I think that would be a tough thing for him to have to deal with. And same with Matrick and having to deal with phones. So it's going to be interesting to watch that. And, you know, the other part of your question is, who's the new It guy, right?
Yeah,
who's the new
yeah.
Jay Allard? That's a really interesting question. You know, most people, when I asked around about that recently, said they thought it would be Joe Belfiore.
Mm.
Joe Belfiore is another one who tends to prefer black turtlenecks and mock turtlenecks and has long hair now. He used to have a buzz cut, but now has long hair, wears baggy jeans. Could be the new Jay, perhaps. He right now is in charge of a big part of Windows Phone 7, so he kind of fits the bill there. But, you know, as far as, like, is there any other kind of cool up-and-coming, you know, It guy inside Microsoft? And I don't even bother to say It girl, because I don't think they have anybody in that position at all at the company. So I don't know. I don't know who it will be, like the person they hold up as the champion, the innovator, the cool guy who has all the big ideas. I just don't see who that is. There's no natural successor that I can think of there.
Well, it's hard, isn't it? What do you do? You got to scale the company, or you buy somebody. But it's hard to see who's going to join the company. How do you buy cool and remain cool? You know, it's like bolting on the brains. It's hard to see. You'd like to think they already have this talent in the company somewhere already. But it's interesting, you know, interesting to see what happens. I mean, one of the coolest externally facing guys they've got right now, at least for geek circles, is Scott Guthrie, strangely enough.
He really pulls
in the geeks. And then the other supposedly cool guy who gets it is Ray Ozzie. But Ozzie, he's more kind of like the grandfather of IT, the grand steward of where we're all going in computing. He's not really, you know, he's not the next Tony Hawk, if you know what I mean. He's not out there.
No, Tony Hawkism there at all.
No.
I mean, Scott Guthrie, that would be funny. Red shirt becomes the new cool. Red is the new black. I don't know. Perhaps. I'm scratching my head too. I'm like, okay, so who's the new guy? I don't know. Because I think they do need somebody like that. Somebody who's their figurehead, who can go out at launches and be the guy, you know?
The bigger question is, unless you're Steve Jobs, can one person come up with all the good ideas, or do they come from different sources?
And is it almost like destructive to have somebody be the cool guy, right? Because... Yeah, Jay Allard was a good guy for them to put out there, but they hadn't been able to put him out there for a while. I mean, they hid the fact he was doing Courier. They wouldn't even acknowledge it, even though the word was out that that was his project. So, you know, if you can't even say what the cool guy's working on, does it kind of defeat the purpose of having a cool guy, you know?
Well, this is part of the problem, that the messaging at the company is such that this everything has to be measured, or it has to be, you can't be appear to be failing. And if you're innovating new ideas, you have to release those controls. But I imagine the communications around things like Courier, it was such a super top secret, and nobody was allowed to talk about it. And yet, had the word been permitted out there, it might have gained some traction. You know, it might have got some early supporters. But he was actually in the ballpark. You know, tablets, but two twin screen tablet device, is that just crazy?
Yeah, I mean. So many people were dying for the Courier. People couldn't believe it when they killed it. I mean, Microsoft fanboys, yeah, but I mean, that's who your early adopters are, right? So people were just so like, what? They killed it? That was the only cool thing they had. Like that actually was different from Apple, and for once they didn't copy them. So, there's no more Courier, and there's no more Jay Allard to kick around anymore.
And I'd just like to boot note this past conversation by saying that I don't really think that all cool ideas from the industry come from Steve Jobs. It was just a turn of phrase. So Microsoft fanboys, you can keep your flame comments to yourself. All right.
Thank goodness, Gavin. I was worried about you there for a second.
I was going to change address. So let's move on. Apple and Microsoft, round three. Apple's market cap surpassed Microsoft, and everyone got really excited about that. It's minor news. It's the summer already, obviously. We're looking for news stories, it seems. Was there any significance to this? You know, I think this is a perennial issue. It's an evergreen subject, so it was worth looking into and see was there anything more to that. I mean, people were prophesizing, you know, the end of Microsoft. People were offering all kinds of free advice on what Microsoft could do to kind of become more valuable than Apple, you know. And yet, when you take a step back, as you would suspect, you know, market cap's only one way of measuring a company's worth, and it's a way that's actually unique to the stock markets and to the Wall Street people in particular, or the square mile if you're in London or wherever you do your business. But I ran some numbers, and I thought, okay, well, how do you measure the value of a business? Surely you measure it by, one way of doing that is by revenue and profit. And I looked at both companies' most recent full set of complete financial figures, which were up till June 2009 last year for Microsoft, and up till August 2009 for Apple. And it turned out that just three of Microsoft's businesses, that's client, server and tools, and business, were actually worth, they pulled in more revenue, they were worth more than the whole of Apple's business by a good $10 billion more dollars. So that's just three of Microsoft's businesses. That's excluding entertainment devices and online, for whatever they're worth. They pull in peanuts by comparison. In a 12-month period, though, and it looks like Apple's going to blow that away, and Microsoft's core businesses, one we just mentioned, have actually kind of not doing so well. Microsoft's 9 months to date, client, server and tools, business division, they're either revenues either shrinking, it's flat, or it's single digit growth. And that is a bit surprising to me. I was surprised to see Windows client revenue wasn't doing so well when there's supposed to be one of the years when it's pushing Windows 7. Apple, on the other hand, it's only halfway through its year, and already it's pulled in $29 billion in revenue. So Microsoft, 9 months through its year, those three business units have pulled in $20 billion. Apple, halfway through its year, pulled in $29 billion in revenue. So it's been an interesting turnaround there. Apple is really pulling back strongly. I suspect, you know, that's the iPhone, and we'll see a lot of early impact there from the iPad as well. So I was kicking the idea around here, you know, why is this? Why is the Microsoft business kind of, I use the phrase suffering in quote marks, because clearly, you know, it's still pulling in billions of dollars. It made me think about what is the state of the Microsoft business? Where is it? I was interested to know that sales of PC clients, so it's Windows 7, etc., sales are actually down by 15% compared to this time last year, or rather March 2009, and revenue for the division is actually down 18% for the same time in 2009. And again, that's remarkable when you consider it's trying to push Windows 7. So that's the framework. People are obviously looking at Microsoft thinking, you know, why is the business, you know, why are the engines of the business kind of flat or growing slowly or even going backwards? And looping back to our earlier conversation, you know, where are the new ideas coming from? You know, Microsoft has not really come out with new ideas, has it? I mean, it's done the Zune. That was its take on the iPad, on the iPod rather. That fizzled. What else have they done? They've been trying to push cloud,
surface,
yeah, that's more of a cool idea, but it's not pulled in the money, and it's still heavily niche, isn't it, in retail and hospitality. They've come up with some good ideas. Silverlight, again, is that making any money for them? It doesn't really wow Wall Street. Wall Street doesn't know what it is, but you know, the .NET programmers probably will. So It's an interesting state of play. Microsoft's following a lot of areas. It's not making all the right noises that make it sound like an Apple in terms of coming out with ideas first and everyone else follow it. And it's not pulling in the money as a result of that that would make Wall Street maybe bump up its market cap. I mean, MJ, you've been covering Microsoft for a while. What are your kind of thoughts on this?
Yeah. Well, first, I think, you know, a lot of people paid an awful lot of attention to the whole market cap thing when, and I'm not just saying this because I cover Microsoft, but it's like, okay, what are you really measuring? Like, what is the most valuable company mean, right? And how do you measure that? And, you know, if you look at sales, it's obvious Microsoft's still a lot bigger sales-wise than Apple. Mm. Employee-wise, they're much bigger. I mean, number of outstanding shares, they're really a lot bigger. So, you know, it's a metric. It's a metric that's kind of interesting and fun to talk about, especially because, you know, Microsoft bailed out Apple, blah, blah, blah. Mm. But I think my colleague over at ZDNet, Ed Bott, made an interesting observation, which I hadn't thought of, which is Microsoft's fortunes are very much tied to the PC market, right? Yeah. Because their whole backbone has been Windows. And so as Microsoft goes, as the rest of the PC market goes, so goes Microsoft. I mean, if the PC market's doing well, Microsoft does well. If the PC market's stagnant, that's what happens to Microsoft. And, you know, they can get out of that to some extent by kind of hedging their bets and try to think what's the next billion-dollar business. And that's something that Steve Ballmer does. Mm. I mean, when people inside come to him, he always says, do you think this can be our next billion-dollar business? And if the answer is no, then the project is not funded. It doesn't go any further. So that's a pretty steep bar, and there have been only a few things besides Windows and Office that have become Microsoft's next billion-dollar businesses. One of those is SharePoint. Mm-hmm. They were the first one to do it. The next one to do it was System Center, which is Microsoft's suite of systems management tools. You notice we're not talking about phones here. We're not talking mm-hmm. about games. So Microsoft always has known, at least for the past decade, that it needed to be thinking ahead. Like, okay, the Windows and Office cash cows are going to run out of milk at some point, and we got to be ready. We can't just keep thinking that business is going to be super profitable and bankroll all the rest of our company forever.
Yeah.
So, you know, I hear a lot of people say Microsoft sticks its head in the sand. It's not acknowledging this. It's not acknowledging that. I think they have been very cognizant of the fact that Windows and Office are not going to be their cash cows in the next, you know, coming decade. And they've been trying to figure out, okay, so what is going to be?
Yeah. That's the problem. And I think looking... Yeah. The things you mentioned, like SharePoint and System Server, are in those business units that are the core of the company still. But those businesses are kind of they're flat, or they're growing slowly, or they're not growing at all. And so the question, I don't think it's really hasn't cracked, is where's the next billion-dollar business outside of our core business? And that's where it's struggled. That's where it's struggling with online business, and that's where it's struggling with, well, entertainment devices, I'd say.
Yep. Yep. So, you know, they have to be betting on a lot of things. Some of them are going to pan out. Some of them aren't going to pan out. And they have to be, you know, making big investments and big bets like they're doing with search and the cloud and advertising. But the question is, are their big bets going to kind of turn the corner before Office and Windows run out of money?
Yeah.
And that's the big question, right?
Well, it's interesting that, you know, the Bing investment and the cloud investment, is Microsoft spending a lot of money for points in market share right now. It might be moving the needle up, you know, a couple percent a quarter, or maybe 1% a quarter, but it's expending a hell of a lot of money to get these small market share gains. How long can, you know, investors, will they stand for this? I mean, Microsoft is at a crossroads, you know, and it's trying to decide which way to go. Does it double down on the enterprise, or does it spend heavily to get out of these three core businesses into the new field? And that's the problem it's kind of got. I mean, the new stuff's not panning out. It's not paying back yet, and it's going to be a good long time before it does pay back.
Yep. And you're touching on a topic we've talked about many times on Microbyte in the past, which is, are the shareholders going to get fed up, and when are they going to get fed up, and what does that mean in terms of Steve Ballmer being the CEO? We've sparred on this before, Gavin,
yes.
Because you, in fact, I believe you called me a Microsoft shill as I recall. Not that I'm holding grudges or anything, but but you know, it stirred this whole thing up again, this whole market cap thing. I had so many people saying to me in email and on Twitter, they were like, okay, so this is it, right? Like, the shareholders are going to get so pissed off, they're going to oust Ballmer. Okay, guys, like, even if they're mad, even if the stock has been stagnant for 10 years since Ballmer took over as CEO, can the shareholders create this uprising, and are they ready to create this uprising where they convince Bill Gates and the board of Microsoft, you know, who are all friends of Steve Ballmer's, to oust him?
Yeah.
So, no, it's never, you know, until
no.
And until there's a viable candidate to replace him who people actually think would be a better CEO, I don't think they're going to take the radical step of taking Steve Ballmer out and putting in somebody who might not work out.
Yeah, they've got to decide what is the future of the company, and it's going to take, it won't take, if it comes down to shareholders, it'll come down to large institutional shareholders, which has happened to other tech companies, where they decide enough is enough, we've got to do something about it. And for that to happen, there's going to have to be a significant change in Microsoft's current business fortunes. Those multi-billion dollar businesses that are currently pulling in the money are going to have to start failing badly. Currently, the ship is kind of fairly on an even keel. It's just trying to chart a new direction, and that's the challenge. Where do those new ideas come from? I don't know. I mean, people are telling me, you know, it needs to buy something. Microsoft needs to buy something rather than reinvent the wheel, which is what it's trying to do with cloud computing. You know, I agree with that. I mean, also, I'd also suggest, you know, this comes back to the innovation question and the Allard question. Microsoft needs to really cloister itself in some meditation and think, what is the next big idea? You know, everything Ozzy's doing, he's putting Microsoft on the cloud, he's putting Microsoft in the internet, which Microsoft failed to do for more than a decade. But, you know, okay, everyone else is up there. What is the next big idea, and what's Microsoft going to do to kind of cash in on that and make people follow it? I don't know where that is, and Microsoft as a tech company hasn't really shown signs that it quite knows what the next big idea is, other than following it. But then, you know, having said that, that's pretty, like, the less sympathetic people out there would suggest that's Microsoft's shtick, is to take an existing idea, improve on it, and brand it a lot better, which is what they've done with Windows and many other products.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I always give them the benefit of the doubt, because just when you're ready to say, okay, they're done, they get no more ideas, they come up with something that people seem to want to like, or convince some more OEMs that they should stick with them and not dump them for the imaginary Chrome operating system, which is supposedly coming now in Q4, right? So, yeah. I don't know. You know, the one thing I've really felt lately is they're really playing up the whole we're all in with the cloud thing. And it makes me wonder if BPOS, the Business Productivity Online Suite, and a lot of the things they're doing around that space in terms of hosting their own apps is going to be their next billion-dollar business. And how quickly can that offset losses in Windows Server? You know, does it help them to get more people on BPOS if they're not buying servers? I don't know. I mean, not that Windows Server is in a lost state. I don't want to make that incorrect assumption here. But, you know, they've said they're having trouble selling as many servers and keeping the growth there going as it has in the past because of budget constraints, the economy, and all that. So it's a lot cheaper to try to sell somebody a service at $15 a month than to sell them a server at, you know, however many hundreds of thousands of dollars at once.
Yeah. Well,
No, I was going to say, so maybe that's the game plan. Otherwise, I don't know what their game plan is, Gavin. I mean, I don't know what the next big idea is. Maybe there's some other project like Courier that we don't know about that's going to pop out as a code name somewhere.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Who knows? Well, there's a lot for that Chrome Dome of Ballmer to think about. What is his state of mind, do you reckon, MJ, as we finish up their financial year and, you know, as they reorg the E&D division? We've got Ballmer Mood Index, frustrated, intense, all business, victorious, and monkey boy. And I know we've been pretty much all business for the last few episodes. What do you think this time?
I think he's more like in the intense mood right now. And I think that because first, now he's running phones and games. So that's pretty intense for somebody who wasn't having to run those. He's got resignations of two high-profile people to deal with. And also because, as you just mentioned, it's the end of their fiscal year, and it's sell, sell, sell right now for them to try to meet all their quotas and finish out the year strong. So I think Ballmer's probably pretty busy and pretty heads down right now. What do you think?
I think that's a pretty fair assessment. I would say, firstly, I don't believe personally that the president of Entertainment Advice has resigned. I believe he was invited to resign, and it was made to look good. So I think Ballmer knew what he wanted. He's intense because he knows E&D has to go somewhere. He's intense because Q4 has to do some significant business to claw back from the situation that Microsoft's financials are in right now. Based on what I've seen for the first time 9 months, the core businesses are lagging. They're behind where they were this time last year. And thirdly, there's the renewed question of where's the cool stuff coming from, which is if Microsoft wants to get into the cool kids, into the smartphone market big style, it needs to tap that, and again, I don't see where that's coming from. So yeah, intense is a good way to put it. And let's not forget, Steve Ballmer's no Tony Hawk.
Although I wouldn't mind seeing him skateboard around at
I would pay money to see that.
No more Monkey Boy, it would be Skateboard Boy.
I'd like to see him in a skateboard helmet doing some tubes.
That would be funny. Well, Gavin, it's the end of our regular episode this week.
It is. If you can't get enough of this, tune in next time for Microbyte. And if you can get enough of this, tune in anyway and see if we change your mind. My name is Gavin Clark, software editor for The Register.
And I'm Mary Jo Foley, editor of the All About Microsoft blog on ZDNet. And this has been Microbyte, brought to you by the people who bite the hand that feeds IT.